Couple of housekeeping things. We got a pretty full house tonight, so we want to make sure that we get through this as quickly as possible and give everybody that wants to speak a chance to do that or ask questions. With that said, I'm Mitch Nichols. I'm the code administration director for the county, and I'm also a facilitator for the Surface Mining Advisory Committee. I would like to welcome you all. Thank you for coming. We appreciate the effort and time you've taken to join us here tonight, and we look forward to hearing from you. Tonight we have Cadman Enterprises is here. Chuck Rose and Christy McDonough are going to join us and make a presentation on the expansion of the Cadman Lewisville pit. That said, I'd like to at least to have people at the table introduce themselves, and then we can get going with the presentation.
I'm Matt Kamey with Clark County Public Works and County Engineer.
Megan Reed with Clark County Public Works.
Mike Boyer, Clark County Code Enforcement.
I'm Chuck Rose with Cadman Materials.
Christy McDonough with Cadman Materials.
I'm Nelson Holmberg with Southwest Washington Contractors Association.
Ellen Rogers, Southwest Washington Contractors Association.
Richard Gerland, Friends of the Sport.
You'll need to move the microphone a little bit closer to you there. Thank you very much. Okay.
Bo Stordahl, Stordahl & Sons.
Fantastic. Well, I'll turn it over to you now. So thank you, Chuck and Christy.
Okay. Thanks, Mitch. Again, I'm Chuck Rose, and this is Christy McDonough. And what we'd like to do tonight is talk about our project at our Lewisville mine, and then give you a brief presentation, then open up for questions. Mitch, thank you for allowing us to have the opportunity to present our project here. Just a little bit about who we are. We're Cadman Materials, and we're part of a larger company called Lehigh Hanson. We're part of the Canadian region, and we have 24 active sites throughout Oregon and Washington. We produce concrete and aggregate products, high-quality products to high environmental standards. We're also part of the Heidelberg Cement Group, and Lehigh Hanson is a part of a global network of mines, plants, networks across Europe, Central Asia, Pacific, Africa, North America. We're part of we're a small company here, but we're part of a larger, much larger group. Where we operate in Southern Washington, we have, we're at Fisher, which is on 192nd, Orchards is on 117th, and the site we're talking about here is Lewisville is up on 503. And some of you know that I've been in the area. We recently moved out of English Pit. That's close to being reclaimed and mined out, but that we recently were part of the English Pit. And we also have four operations in Oregon. Sure, sorry about that. Thank you. Okay. So we talk about our Lewisville sand and gravel operation. Again, we're Cadman Materials, and we were purchased by back in July of 17, we were previously Cemex, so we've had several owners over the last 20 years. The Lewisville mine's been operating since 1992. We've got 17 employees at Lewisville, and we've been, we provide construction materials for Clark County. Most everything we produce is stays in Clark County. Our proposal is to expand the existing mine, and you can see that kind of rectangular shaped area to the north and the west. That's the expansion area where our project's going to include. The traffic, access points in and out of the mine, and all the routes will stay consistent with current operations, so there's no proposal to change any of that. The processing area where we're processing the aggregates currently will stay the same. That's not going to change at all. And the amount of aggregates that we produce will remain pretty consistent with what we've been doing in the past. So the changes are to include that rectangular area to the northwest. We'd also like to mine deeper in the existing mining area with a similar depth in that expansion area. And then we would also like to include the use of a mobile crusher in the expansion area. When we do the studies that we're going to do will be an archaeological study, site one evaluation, which we'll talk about hydrology for the most part, We'll do a geologic hazard assessment and report. We'll do noise studies. Traffic studies are included with that, wetland delineation, and a wildlife habitat assessment. Yeah. So that's our project in a nutshell. Fairly straightforward. We just want to expand into the existing operation and continue to do what we have been doing in this pretty much the same parcels, but just mine in a different area and open that up for mining. Christy, did I miss anything? Okay. So open up for any questions anybody has.
Yes. For questions. My name is Ann Short. I live on Colewitter Road, which is along the East Fork of the Lewis River. One of your points is that with expansion, you maintain that there will be consistent traffic quantity, access points, and routes. How can you expand this operation and not have a greater number of trucks? You use the word quantity. How can you do this and not have a greater number of trucks than are already going there? And before I ask your answer, I've become a truck counter in the last year or so. My high from going from the Heisen Bridge to Safeway on Main Street is 21. Often those trucks are in pairs of two, sometimes three trucks in a row. And so they really have an impact on our neighborhood, on Rock Creek Road, on the highway. How do you maintain that you won't increase the quantity of trucks?
Well, the current operation, the way that we mine, that we produce with the equipment we produce, and the hours that we're limited on producing will not change. So the amount of materials that we are going to produce for sale will remain consistent with what we've done in the past. And so the number of trucks that will come in to purchase that material or to load and haul out will remain the same as it is now. We're not proposing to change that at all. The way that we access the mine, the way the trucks come in, the way the trucks leave, and the amount of materials we produce would be the same, very similar.
Another question? Will you be doing anything to, beyond what you do now, to deal with violations? Violations that I have seen on Rock Creek Road. The trucks are not supposed to come back loaded on Rock Creek Road. I've seen trucks come down Kelly Road, excuse me. Oh, no. As Emily Latilla would say, never mind.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Different quarry altogether.
Yeah, that's okay.
I'm glad it's not us.
Yeah.
I think that'll be for me for later.
So if there are those of you who in the audience that want to come up and speak, you will have to approach the table so we can get it on record. Thank you.
I don't intend to stay at the table because I have a horse. Probably a good thing for everyone here. So two questions, really. One is just a pragmatic one. You mentioned you're limited in the number of trucks you produce and such things. What is the permit that governs? What is the permit that governs your operation now? And what is the loaded truck allowance? And what are your days and hours of operation? That's one question. Sure. Second question is, how is it that you get along with your neighborhood and we don't get along with our operators? Thank you.
No comment on that one. Sort of take them one at a time. We operate under a conditional use permit. Christy, you can help me with this one too as well. Conditional use permit and a permit from reclamation from DNR. We've got an air permit from Southwest Clean Air Department. Those are relatively the permits that we operate under.
We have two conditional use permits.
Can you move the mic? Yeah.
We have two conditional use permits. One was for the original mine, then we got another one for an expansion area previously, which govern, and we also have agreements with some of our neighbors, which limit or talk to things like operating hours, et cetera?
The operating hours are 6 to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday. We're not limited, I don't believe, on a truck count. We were, some folks would, we were originally, and that was lifted when the climbing lane got built on 503 going right where across the Lewis River going to the south. When that climbing lane was added, the restrictions that were originally put on us were lifted. I believe so, but I'd have to double check that. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with your mine, so I have a few questions. When you make the expansion, will it encroach further into any neighborhoods, or are you even by any neighborhoods? There's a high population density.
We lease the site, and we're going to expand that lease on this our lessor's property. So it'd be on their property. There are neighbors that we will move closer to than we are now. So that, yeah, as if that answers your question.
Are there quite a few that you're near, or I mean, should they be concerned about increased levels of noise? Because you're closer to the neighbors.
I mean, we're going to stay within the standards that are, we'll assure that we'll stay within the standards and do what we can to keep the noise levels down for them. We'll be as good a neighbor as we can for them.
Have you had many complaints about truck traffic or noise? Or?
Over the last 20 years, we've had some neighbors that call us up about noise, and we'll investigate, and there may be something that we can do to mitigate it for them. But, yeah, so that's how we deal with it.
And one of the conditions of our original permit was that the crusher had to be enclosed in the building with soundproofing. So that helps us a lot with the noise. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
In your expansion, you mentioned the mobile crusher. Is that what you use now?
So on that, I can't remember if I pull a map back up, but we can only have the crushers on the original. The original 68 acres. We can't do anything on it. We didn't get a permit to put the crushers on the others, just to mine. And the way that we have to mine, there's some larger boulders in the deposit that create issues for us. So we'd like to add that mobile portable crusher to that area that we're expanding to, so we can run that and that and not have to deal with that problem.
Will that be enclosed?
Will it mean what?
Enclosed.
We will have to see what the permit conditions deal with.
Yeah. Are you expecting that you will have to enclose it?
I don't know if we are or not. Potentially, we're just in the infancy of putting our package together, so there are some studies that need to be done on it yet.
Mm-hmm. So. Thank you.
Yep.
If you would please introduce yourself when you speak. Thank you.
Hi, Mitch. I'm John Pallister. I'm from the Parkside Air Park community, 28 households that are immediately adjacent to the quarry. And I'm really here to say thank you to Chuck and the group from Cadmin, because we were able to meet with them last week and they gave us a preliminary copy of their plan. We went through it. We had a number of concerns, 10 or 12 concerns that we went over with the Cadmin folks, and they've committed to work to try to meet some of these agreements or these conditions. And so it was, I just wanted to tell you as a community, we had a really positive experience with you all. And I wanted to thank Chuck, Andy, and Christy for your work with us. And hopefully we'll continue to have that work. This idea of a new crusher is something we weren't aware of, and I think we would also have concerns about that being contained somehow to prevent noise, as was the agreement back when the first quarry was created. Our main concerns, the big ones, have to do with reclamation in the existing quarry behind our houses, and hopefully that will start soon. We talked about that and ways that we could ways that that might be accomplished and might indeed be consistent with the, what I believe is the county and the Columbia River group's desire to create a continuous corridor of parkland between Lewis River Park and the Daybreak Park. I think that'd be a really good thing for our community, and we certainly would support it at Parkside. I think that's really about what I had to say. Just once again, thanks to you guys for meeting with us, and we'd like to continue this positive thing so we can be supportive and that you can meet some of these conditions of our neighbors and ourselves, including something like the 200-foot setback around our properties and our neighbors' properties that are developed. So thanks very much. Mitch, one thing I wanted to mention to you is that we didn't receive any notice of the initial, what's it called, the advisory, no, it wasn't that, it was the standby one, the initial meeting, what's it called?
The pre-app meeting.
Yeah, and I understand the pre-app meeting is public, and by county rules, we should have gotten a notification. None of us received that at Parkside. And we're rather disappointed that we didn't get notification from the county. But fortunately, because of our good relation with CADMAN, we received it directly from them. So just a heads up for you and your group.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, is there anyone else that would like to ask questions of CADMAN? Okay, well, thank you so much. I appreciate your time, and I'm sure the committee values your contribution.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. Okay, so before we get started with this second part, is there any adjustments we need to make? Okay, did we have the sign-up sheets recovered? Okay, great. What we're going to do is there's a lot of people I think want to talk tonight, and we want to make sure that we have time to answer everybody's questions. So we're going to go in the order of the sign-up sheets off the list, call people up to the table as we have room, grab a microphone, pull it close to you when you're asking questions, and we'll do what we can to answer the questions for you. Because of the volume of people here tonight, we're short on time. We have a little extra time because of the generosity of CADMAN and getting through the presentation. So we'll have a little more time, but 3 to 5 minutes generally is the amount of time we want to spend on each question, if we can limit it to that. Oh, certainly. Is that better? Okay. okay, there we go. And also, I want to point out is that we're not a decision-making body. The Surface Mining Advisory Committee is a forum. It's an open forum for discussion. And in that vein, we want to be as productive as we can and receive as much good information as we can about the process or things that are of a concern. And we have Ahmad Kayumi and myself here tonight, and Mike Boyer and Megan Reed to answer questions that may come up as best we can. So that in mind, I'll turn it over to Ahmad.
Thank you, Mitch. And I don't have anything else to add. I think we'll just open it up, maybe questions that we can answer. If we're not able to answer it, we'll do a follow-up and then present some type of writing in response to that if you're not able to answer them tonight. So I want to make sure that if whatever we can do, respond tonight. If not, we'll do some follow-up for you. So feel free to ask your questions, and I think make sure we make notes of them.
All right, thank you. So for the first group of individuals, I've got Skip, Hank, excuse me, sign up for, no, hang on just a second here. I've got Vicki Van Zant and Richard Durland. Both have said that you wanted to comment tonight.
Yeah, I missed just that you were closing here with CADMAN, but I just wanted to read a basic statement that we put together to represent Friends of the East Fork, and we've been working with that mine on the Lewisville pits, or Lewisville quarry, for almost 20 years now. And we've done a lot of evaluation and studies and we've had a number of professionals join us and look at that section of the river as well as the whole river all the way down to the center. But our basic statement after summarizing all the studies that we've done, including some recent work, we want to put this into the record, and we state, we have not detected any environmental impacts of concern caused by the quarry that would cause us to oppose or restrict the proposed expansion as long as the quarry operator continues to meet the rules and regulations in coordination, as well as being responsible as they have been doing in the past. We've found them to be very good about coordinating and cooperating with us and working out issues or concerns, and so we support the expansion.
Thank you. All right. I've got Ann Short, and Dick Lowenberg. Oh, are you going to pass? Okay, that's why it's scratched out. Okay. If after hearing people's questions, you decide you want to speak and you haven't indicated you wanted to earlier, please raise your hand and come on up. All right. Katie, sorry? Yes, go ahead.
Okay,
we'll call more people, go ahead.
You and I had exchanged some email in this last couple of weeks, and at the last meeting, I thought we were gonna hear a status of the Kelly Road study. So I think you said you would ask your staff to have something on that.
So the Kelly Road study?
The traffic study that you guys had started up. Measurement.
Okay.
Measurement of the traffic on Kelly Road.
Oh, the truck trips?
Yeah. Well, actually, there were, I think there was some infrastructure placed on the road to account. So have I misunderstood that? We were going to talk about it this time as of the last meeting.
My apologies.
So just a couple things on Kelly Road. We did some pavement repairs on that one last year, and then also part of this year to repair some of the areas that we had some pavement deficiencies. In terms of the counting, we did some video counting, but I don't think that's been the finalized or the numbers is processed. But I know, Megan, do you have any?
I do have some information, actually. So the equipment that was put out there are it's proprietary hardware and software called BioVision cameras. And those BioVision cameras are used in public works to conduct traffic studies at an intersection or a stoplight. And our idea was to try using them at the quarry entrance and exit to count the truck traffic. What gets done with that information then is it's sent back to the company who has that proprietary software, and they perform a count. When we looked at those numbers, what we realized and did a very short comparison with the actual film, what we realized is that the software didn't have the ability to distinguish between a truck and pup in a single truck. And so truck and pup trucks and trailers are being counted twice as opposed to only being counted once. So the counts that the software was able to provide for us, those were not accurate numbers. At this point, it would take somebody having to sit down and watch all of that film 8 hours a day, every single day, and we don't have the staff to do that at this time. So that is where we are with that study.
But we are trying to see if we can get some information on that one, because we do like to have some follow-up discussion with the operator and some of the repairs and pavement condition that we're going to have some discussion with him. But we'll see if there's another way that we can get that information. But so at this point, unfortunately, we don't have that numbers for you.
All right. Ann Short.
I'm a little embarrassed. Is this the time for me to talk about the Wright Quarry, about Rock Creek Road and Kelly Road? And okay. My concerns are that Rock Creek Road and Kelly Road bear an awfully heavy burden with the number of trucks that are on those roads. The violations that I have seen, not recently, I will admit, but that I have seen are trucks that are loaded going the wrong way. They're not supposed to be loaded and come down Rock Creek Road because there's a bridge at the end of Rock Creek Road that can't sustain that kind of weight. And Kelly Road is also very steep for them to come down when they're loaded. As I said before, the count that I have made, and I count them almost every day, it's really an average. From my house, it takes about 8 minutes to get into town, and an average is 11 trucks in 8 minutes. So I think about that over and over during the day. Certainly there have to be more than 70 trucks during the day. The final comment that I wanted to make, I was driving towards town on Rock Creek Road and came to the highway where I'm required to stop to turn left. And coming north toward me were two of the big double gravel trucks. And the truck in front failed to slow down enough at the intersection where he was to turn right. I don't know if you've ever had one of those experiences where your life kind of flashes before you and you say, this is it, because I felt that he could not slow that truck down enough to keep one of the two containers from going over on me and my little sedan and flattening me. He did get it slowed down enough, but it was very frightening. And I think the trucks have a real negative impact. We moved up to this part of the country from Oregon to enjoy the East Fork of the Lewis River that we live on. And we just think that the trucking is, there's too much of it, that it needs to be cut down in some way.
So, I'll start with the pattern of travel. Our preferred method is to head north out of the pit on Kelly Road, travel west on Gabriel Road to 503 to get into town. We can't require that all of our customers use that route, but the bridge that you're referring to at the end of Rock Creek is limited to, I believe, 38 ton on a tandem, which is really specific to emergency vehicles. Because the weight that we travel on is 34,000 pounds on a tandem, which is 17 tons. So we're 20 ton lighter than what the bridge allows. But emergency vehicles are much heavier on a tandem. So that's why that bridge restriction is there. And it's not on overall gross weight. It's on a single tandem weight, which is a set of two axles. So our axles don't, legal weight is 34,000 pounds. Maximum permitted weight for a low boy, for instance, is 43,000 pounds on a tandem. So we don't exceed the weights on the bridge. To the point of, what was the second issue? The second issue was the bridge, and then the third issue was the near miss.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can sympathize that it is a busy stretch of road. You know, 503 is a state highway. I think we're fortunate that we don't have to travel on county roads very far to get to that interstate system, to get back out to the interstate, but they do have a place to go. You know, there is a demand for the rock. There's been a lot of discussion at the past meetings and hearings about the limited supply of aggregate resource in the county, and I think that Mountaintop being busy is a consequence of that. I wish there was a more convenient and less intrusive way of transporting gravel, but there simply isn't.
Can you encourage them to slow down when they get to Rock Creek Road?
I can.
I mean, I could see the driver's face, and it looked like he forgot his turn, you know. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, I'm a squish bug.
Where was this at?
It was at Rock Creek Road and the highway, 502.
So you were waiting to turn left on the 503?
Yes, on the 503.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Okay, we have Marie and Gary Oger and Nick Edgar.
I'm Gary Oger. Just have a couple questions. We had some testing done by EPA and went over the results at a previous SMAC meeting. As a follow-up question to that, was the existing overburden pile on Mountaintop tested as part of that? I can't remember.
Nope, it wasn't.
And the reason I ask is there were previous studies, accredited labs and so on, that did find substances like Mordenite and things in the earlier days. And my concern is that overburden pile was put there at a time when the upper layers were being mined. As you recall, we had a scientist last time speculate that Mordenite, arionite, all the zeolites are different in different layers. And so what was tested by the EPA was no doubt at the deeper layers. Those substances may still exist in the upper layers of the mine. If they were there before, they would likely still be there. So two things. One is it's under consideration to move that overburden pile, and I would think it would be a good idea to test that before moving it, given the high winds up there that's going to disperse dust over a long, wide area as that is all moved. And then the other thing is that's under consideration is expanding the mine itself, which is going to put it right back into upper layers again, where in the past they found substances that were the original concern, you know, that caused the interest in having EPA do the testing. So we're all relieved that the current testing was clean, but I think that doesn't mean we shouldn't require periodic testing of either the overburden pile or as the new layers are considered to be mined, that it be required to have periodic testing by an independent lab to make sure we're not getting into those materials again. So I just want to put that out there that as a follow-up to the good news of those studies is I think we need to keep looking. Another thing is I'm sitting here out there listening to the truck counts and all of that. I don't recall that it's ever been clarified. I think the CUP is written for 30 trucks an hour, which would be 2 minutes apart. And I sat in on the pre-app for the expansion, and I don't think it's been well defined even yet. Does that mean 2 minutes apart, or could you have, 30 trucks come through in a big batch, or is it 360 trucks a day? I think that needs to be defined. And if it's 2 minutes apart, which would likely be the case for noise control, then it should be defined a little more clearly so that if they need to be 2 minutes apart and they're not, then there's a violation, just in fairness to the people that use those roads up there, which I know is a big problem for the people that live on Kelly Road and some of the others up there. Those are my comments.
Thank you.
And if you have any response to that.
I do. So arionite isn't found in dirt. It's found in pockets within rock and the not typically in basalt, which is present up there. I would think follow-up testing would be appropriate if there was reason to suspect it existed in the first place. I don't know who pulled the samples that you're referring to. Dick Dearland might have some insight on that and where those samples were pulled from, but they weren't pulled from inside the pit. They weren't pulled from the rock dust, and they weren't pulled from the overburden pile. So is there insight on where the samples were pulled from in the past that
were more nitrogen? No, they came from a variety of area around there, down the road, that the main haul road. To keep it clean and independent, I was not involved in the sampling at all. They hired outside professionals that were certified that took the samples. I could try and go back and contact those people and see exactly where they took the samples, but
yeah, you'd think there'd be a testing method and something plotted out, you know, where
this it had to be pulled. Very rigidly done. There was no question about that.
Yeah. I think seeing that and then comparing that to the EPA samples could give us some direction, but to just say we need to just keep sampling, I mean, you could ask EPA to do that, but I think they made it clear that they weren't concerned about Arionite or Mortonite.
My reaction is, having worked with the EPA a long time and been involved in sampling within the federal agency I was working with, one has to be cautious about some of that because things do happen. I think Gary raises a good point here. It's something that I think we need to keep an eye on because when you get two credible testing labs get the same results and another one gets something different, it's more than just a technical thing. It maybe it's the variation in the layers of the rock, whatever, but there's something happening there. Thank you.
Which laboratory tested the dust in your home? Or who performed that test?
That test, that was not a certified test. That was done by a scientist who was not paid to give us a certified result. The reason we did that test was to see whether there was reason to believe that having a certified test would be worthwhile. And the results with the equipment they had available did indicate, you know, the presence of Arionite. And so and we still have those samples, original samples available, so they could be tested by a certified lab. You know, the cost of doing that, you know, you don't want to throw all kinds of money at it without some indication that there's cause to believe it might find those results. So the results we have, and I think we sent you the pictures of, we sent around the electron microscopic pictures of that. Arionite has a pretty distinctive profile visually. An electron microscope indicates that, you know, pretty readily. I didn't see EPA's pictures of the samples, you know, so that we could compare just visually. I'm not a scientist, so I can't really evaluate their work, but I did see the Arionite pictures. And it was a scientist that knew what they were looking at. So, but I've given the nature of that and the fact it wasn't a paid study, it was more of a favor. We can't really do much with that study. It needs to be a certified lab.
Yep, I agree.
Thanks.
All right, I'm going to call again for Nick Edgar.
Good evening.
Good evening.
A few things. The first item is the running on holidays. I'm the complainant of record for both of those. I was informed that the fine for the first occurrence of that on Martin Luther King Day was $500, seems kind of low. If you're running 300 trucks, that's $1.67 a truck. That's pretty low as a business expense. So it just seems to me that to actually discourage this behavior, the fees should be more than that. And we just want to, you know, have the quarry following the CUP that's there, especially considering that they're looking to expand. The second thing is the condition of Gabriel Road, on which I live. Latest count coming here, there's over 60 individual potholes in the road. It's pretty bad, and a lot of them are right where they were last year when it got repaired. And there are a lot of potholes are right in the middle of the repairs. So it's going to need to get repaired again this year. This is going to be an annual expense for the county until the county actually decides to re-engineer the road for the amount of truck traffic that it gets. Otherwise, the citizens are paying for it with their tires and their suspensions and their shocks throughout the year. So that's something that I'd really like to see happen, is if assuming that the trucks continue going down the road, and this is true for Kelly Road as well, that those roads need to be re-engineered to support that kind of heavy traffic. And the third thing, which I was just thinking of, with the discussion of the counting of trucks, is there some way that we can have a volunteer count the trucks? How could we do that in a fair manner? Have somebody actually record a day's worth of trucks on a volunteer basis? Is there, you know, would we need two people to do that together to, you know, sign off on it and verify each other's counts? Or, you know, that's just, I think that's something that a lot of people would like to see done. And I'm wondering if there's some way we can do it, since the county is limited on staff and budget. Is there some way that can be done on a volunteer basis that could be put into the record?
I think just like any independent evaluation, it has to be somebody who's certified and has the professional abilities to do this.
We're talking counting trucks and writing down what time they go by.
No, I understand that. It's just like when you take up samples for evaluation, there has to be somebody independent who are qualified to do the work. If they were certified to work, that's the big thing.
Okay.
So, and anytime we have to, for the county, need to do any kind of evaluation, so we either hire a consultant to do this, and sometimes they do video and then go back in the office and count them, or they are always on site, need to count them until, like, intersections. A lot of times they go intersection because they do the volume counts, several people, but it's usually about 2 or 3 hours. For a full day, probably really expensive for them to sit there and do the counts. But typically, if it is done, it has to be independent professional services that do the work so that they can certify the work. And some, if it get challenged, it can meet the testing requirement.
I was wondering if we could do, you know, somebody there with a clipboard and a video camera so that there's a video backup, you know, of what they do. Just trying to think outside the box a little bit so that we can get this done rather than saying, well, we can't afford it, you know, because there are people that could do it, and I think that there are means in which we could do it that would be fair.
I think that's why we tried the first time, where we used the computer and the software was proprietary information. We thought they would be able to give us the information. Unfortunately, it didn't. So the next thing will be to have somebody sit there, watch the video, which then we have to pay and be another, either be on site or sitting in the office watching the video to do the counts. So kind of similar expense.
Do we have any sort of timeline for when that sort of thing might happen?
That's something that we probably have to do a little bit more discussion internally in terms of what can we do, and I'll work with Mitch's office and on those things. But at this point, I don't have an answer for that.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. That's the last of the speakers that was signed up. Is there anyone else who would like to ask? Oh, never mind. I've got one more. Okay, I'm gonna trip. Is this Bob and Sandy? I can't get the last name. I'm sorry? It's for Livingston, yes. So let's move on to Livingston. Come on up.
No, we're open to hear. We're open to hear any questions or comments you have at this point. I think we'll like to maybe just keep it to whatever questions you might have. So. All right.
I'm the mouthy one, so I'll come up. Okay. We probably missed a couple of meetings because we were out of town. And the last thing that we had heard was that they were closing it completely. Then they were going to reopen it so that Livingston Mountain, the one off of Bradford Road, that they were going to close that, then they were going to reopen it and let them take out what was already done, the material that they already had there, and then they were going to close it. Now we got trucks running up and down the road all the time and blasting. I'm getting emails saying that when the blasting is supposed to happen, sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. This last week it was supposed to be scheduled for Wednesday or Thursday, and it happened on Friday. And I'm still concerned about the amount of power that they're using in these things, because when the dishes rattle in my cupboards and fall over, I think that's too much. And I'm not quite a mile away from it, but that's too much. I have broken tiles because of the blasting. That's a lot of money for me to have to replace that. How long is this going to really go on? I see this piece of paper, and they're talking about clear up until 2026 or 27 now? No? Really? I hope.
That's one of the things we want to ask, is whether these dates are taken out of the permits and the contracts.
Can we get a microphone? All right.
The chronology that's here is taken out of the contract and the plan of operations and the CUP. And those citations are given at the end of each item there. And one of the things we'd like to do tonight is have confirmation that the operator agrees that these are, in fact, the dates. It does go to 2027 because that's when the contract between the Department of Natural Resources and the county ends. Until that time, the county has an obligation to pay $50,000 a year to the state. According to the other document, which is up there on the board now, the county auditor has ruled that Tower Rock Products has a continuing obligation to pay that entire amount of money to the state until 2027. And
operating or if it's not
The auditor has ruled that it is implicit in the contract that they have assumed as the subcontractor, and in fact it may apply to Stordahl and Sons as well.
That's not
signing
that's not
of the contract as a sub gives them the obligation to pay off that remaining $50,000 a year. But those dates and those issues are listed here out of the contracts, and one of the things I think we'd like is clarity. And fundamentally, they're only allowed to operate, the terminology is removal and mining of rock at Livingston Quarry must end by the 31st of December this year. The remaining things should have to do only with reclamation, that is sloping
that
it out.
I understood.
Sloping it out, planting trees. But there is an obligation every year until 31 December 2027 for there to be a biannual survey to make sure that the trees that are planted are going to actually grow, which is of some significant question given the limited amount of dirt they're going to put back.
Right.
But so that's one of the issues we'd like to have addressed. It's just that. The neighborhood does not understand exactly what the operator believes they're going to do and what the schedule is, which is why I drew this up, and we'd welcome comments on that.
You have a copy of that, Greg?
And just to clarify with that quick, part of the concern is that there doesn't seem to be any rush. You know, you're not.
I can only move it as fast as it sells. you know, so that's what I'm limited to.
Okay, so market conditions.
Market conditions, and it's, we're in the middle of winter right now, you know, busy season's going to be this summer, but.
And where are you at with the CUP application?
Close to being submitted. All the information that Tappany is waiting on me to provide them. Okay. There's a lot of info that needed to be done, a geotech report on slopes steeper than 15%, a traffic accounting letter, and they take time.
And Mitch, that's considered timely by the county, 6 months after the required deadline for the CUP application to be submitted?
So I'm actually not in control of that particular process, so I'm timely is relevant to the application. Things do take longer for certain types of applications.
I mean, I'm over a year and a half into applying for a CUP at Mountaintop, so they do take time.
Yeah. So is the last...
We're looking into that specific language of the contract right now, that timely issue that you're asking about. That is something that we're looking into right now.
There was a deadline listed.
30 days after the lifting of the...
I think it... Didn't it say we'll diligently pursue... there wasn't a 30-day deadline.
The application had to be submitted within 30 days of the lifting of the stop work order.
The pre-app report, which was done.
No, that's not what the contract says. That's part of the problem here.
Well.
Because the contract says that the application must be applied for within 30 days of the lifting of the stop work order. Now, we've disagreed about what date that is because the county, in a misguided interpretation by a prosecuting attorney, which is not unusual in this county, has decided that it's one date. DNR in a document from Mr. Kiyomi to the county residents said that it happened on a different date. But regardless of that, no application today has yet been applied for. And the fact that somebody put in a pre-app for a subject which is not the subject which is specified in the contract, whether they did it on time or not on time by the 23rd or whatever it was of September, it's 6 months later now, and it's not been submitted. There's no possible way that that application is timely. The contract says that they can make diligent progress in pursuing the application, but the application has not been made. The application was not in conformance with the requirement of the contract, and all right to peak trips has long since expired. The limit on the quarry in the contract, up on the wall there, you can read the terms line by line, says that truck trips will be limited to 70 per day with one singular exception, and that exception is conditional on having applied for that contract or for that application within 30 days of the lifting of the stop work order. It's 6 months since the lifting of the stop work order. There is no application.
The condition that you're referring to is providing notice the Friday before intention of using peak. You don't have a formal application in any county within 30 days. There's a pre-app process where you find out what information the county is going to require to have a fully complete application. That takes time. And I was surprised at the requirements that I had to make. I thought it was a simple question of a hearing examiner to determine if the 95 loads from the Livingston Mountain Quarry could access that gate. That was my understanding of what it would be limited to, but it became much deeper than that, and that does take time.
The fact that the Tower Rock attorney and Tower Rock management signed the agreement with the terms in it, which say that the application must be submitted within 30 days. If that's not what they intended to say, then I suggest you sue the attorney for not giving them proper guidance on what ought to be in the contract. The contract was signed by the county and by the operator, in this case, your contractor, the Tower Rock. You're not party to this, actually. It's all between...
I'm right in the middle of it. I can assure you that.
But the fact is that contract was signed with that requirement, and that requirement has not been met. We've been lectured over and over by the county manager that the intent doesn't matter. What matters is what the words are in the contract. That contract says that application was due 6 months ago. It has not been submitted yet. This is like a red line in the sand right now, because the operators collectively have been allowed to go with these enhanced levels of trips, which is the exception in the contract, which are in violation of the CUP in addition to being not met under the terms of the contract. And you were, as you said, you're waiting for the season to pick up so you can run 140 trips a day. But you failed, you and Tower Rock have failed to meet the terms of the contract, which Tower Rock signed, and therefore it reverts to 70 days, period. Sorry if your attorneys didn't get it right.
But when is the last day you'll take rock out of Livingston Quarry and Livingston Mountain Quarry?
When I'm required to.
And what date is that?
I believe that's the end of this year.
December 31st, 2020?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then there's requirements to begin reclamation, move the crusher, move the scales, be completely done by the end of the following year, and then reclamation monitoring shall be done 7 years after the planting of the seeds to ensure growth. I disagree that there's a requirement to pay $50,000 a year. There is language that once the reclamation is done and the resource is exhausted, so are the minimums. We have every intention of meeting our obligations on these dates.
All right, how much rock do you have left to haul out?
I would say 400,000 ton in total.
How many truck trips a day is that for the next 10 months?
Well, that's in total. I have to be done with the Livingston Quarry site by that time. I'd love to move it all and be completely out of there by the end of it, but if it doesn't sell, I just simply can't sell it from the Livingston Quarry. I don't determine how fast it leaves. You know, that is all market driven.
So you'll walk away from it?
From what?
The remaining rock left on the state owned side.
So what is the There isn't much left there. We're extracting from the Livingston Mountain Quarry right now. And we're wrapping that up. You know, we're a couple weeks out from being done blasting on that site. And then it just turns into selling rock.
How many more blasts?
One or two.
Okay.
But the question actually is, so this, let me get the right reference here. 595 says removal and mining of rock at Livingston Quarry ends on 31 December this year.
When are you on?
Sir, about where that first, just above the first bolded red, 31 December down there. No, he's got, the green one is the same as this one. So, you know, like.
You're looking at December 31st, 2020?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so there in the first one for 31 December, it says removal and mining of rock at Livingston Quarry ends on 31 December, and that's in 595, para 9, and in the plan of operations that you all signed with DNR in August. Now, under the state contract, the term removal of rock means the transportation of the rock off of the site. So according to this, you can't move any further material off of Livingston Quarry after the end of the year. But the question is, are you saying that you intend to move rock off of Livingston Mountain Quarry after that? And how would that work? Because you're required to move it off of Livingston Mountain Quarry through
Livingston Quarry.
Livingston Quarry.
Yep.
So how could you be moving rock off of Livingston Mountain Quarry after the first of next year?
Well, if it comes to it, there's always coming off of the Livingston Mountain Quarry with material from that.
Are you intending to move a rock crusher onto that side so you get the additional trips, or will you keep the 16 allowed in that CUP?
There won't be a rock crusher on that site.
Then there are no truck trips beyond the 16.
I've seen that been alleged, and I will read into that. I can't imagine that a CUP was written limiting a rock quarry to 16 loads a day.
Like, it was the initial allowance out of the quarry before the CUP was issued for the current operation.
Well, I didn't negotiate that. That sounds like a terrible deal, but I'll look into it.
Page 2.
Okay. Thank you.
But again, the basic question is, we want to know when loaded trips are going to stop coming down 262nd Street onto 53rd. And it seems to us that the documents, the contract signed and the plan of operation and the cup more or less required collectively, that has to end by the end of this year. And when you sort of hedge and say, well, we might not sell it all by then we want to know Are you intending to violate these terms and bring it off, or do you have some other reason you believe you're allowed to bring it off there? Or is it done?
We are currently marketing the material as fast as possible off the Livingston Quarry to achieve this.
But if you don't,
I agreed to it. I agreed to it, Greg. I have every intention of moving that product by the end of the year.
Okay. And we talked last SMAC that reclamation is not joint now. Do you know when reclamation will start on the Livingston Mountain Quarry side?
It's already begun. You know, it happens as we mine.
Sure.
But it is a, as far as DNR mining is concerned, DNR land says it's not joint. DNR mining wants the land to be appropriate with each other from parcel to parcel. They don't care who owns the parcel. They want the drainage to be adequate. So it really is a sinuous reclamation plan between the two sides.
As far as you know, is that the intent for the owner of the Livingston Mountain Quarry? Joint reclamation?
That's the plan.
Okay.
Yeah.
If the county does the right thing and actually enforces the terms of the contract.
Meaning what?
Meaning that you're limited to 70 truck trips a day starting now.
And it would take twice as long.
Well, you aren't going to have twice as long, so what would you do?
Well, I'd have to get creative. But I don't believe that we are in...
Does that mean violating the truck numbers?
No.
Okay.
I don't believe that we are in default of any terms of the amendment to 595. I can make the argument that you don't get an application in 30 days.
It doesn't matter what you get, Bo. It's a question of what the contract your employer, in this case, Tappany Incorporated, signed. And they signed an obligation to complete that within 30 days of the lifting of the stop work order. It also requires that the county approve that application before it's submitted. There is no written approval by the county for the application because there is no application. Neither of those things have been done. Both of those things are contractually required. We're not going to settle it here, but what I would say, and I think an awful lot of people, if I ask the question here, how many people are willing to go to court to settle this issue to limit the number of trucks to what's required under the contract? Thank you. That's a broad opinion in the community. We have avoided any talk of litigation on this matter for years. We have tolerated almost everything. We have tolerated years before these gentlemen became the managers responsible for this, allowing the total mismanagement of this. Nobody ever requested a peak operational period until these folks came here. You guys ran a joint operation without any authority for it, in violation of all kinds of Surface Mining Act and all kinds of things. You ran peak operations without ever meeting the terms of the CUP. Finally, people are holding you to account for this, and we intend to hold the county to account for the contract that they signed. It was a terrible contract. We all agree the county has terrible attorneys. Mr. Golick is a terrible prosecuting attorney.
Can we not?
Okay, that's a personal opinion. I'll
appreciate that.
He's an elected official. We can pretty well say what we want about elected officials. I wouldn't comment about
in
it.
In the spirit of
community.
Thank you.
We will be charitable where maybe we wouldn't necessarily want to be charitable. The county would be richer if we weren't in court all the time. The county lost the case on GMA because the attorneys failed to meet the timely submission of documents. That has put an end to many of the projects that you all are responsible for, the railroad and the expansion of all that stuff, because the timely document wasn't filed. This is exactly the same thing. The document was not filed on time. You lose those cases in court. And I think here, and we haven't done a lot of polling about that, I think the funds are here to pursue this. I suggest that the county carefully consider what the terms of the contract they signed were. The gentlemen sitting here know that myself and others in this room took heated exception to that contract, which is a terrible contract, not just from our point of view, but from the operator's point of view. It left you all hanging out in ways that it shouldn't leave you hanging out. But that's the contract they insisted on signing. We have been told by counselors that they knew that it was a bad contract, but they were told by the prosecuting attorney's office that they had to sign it.
I have a few more questions. Sorry, Greg. Ahmad, this is for you. Last I've seen from the public records, you were still invoicing for upwards of $91,000 in road improvement fees. Have you received those yet?
We're still in negotiation with them on that to kind of get that finalized. There are some previous documents that we still have to review, But that was the last time we had that understanding. So after review, then we can, but we're still working with the operators on that one.
Okay.
So I have an additional. Oh, go ahead, Wendy. So, Mr. Stordahl, can I call you Bo? I
mean, sure.
Yeah, okay. So, at the Yakult Quarry, one of the issues in the expansion is that you realize that you can't put the overburden out there without a additional modification or a new CUP. I don't follow it that closely. I don't know which it is. Doesn't matter. But you also have to modify your permit there, correct? Because your permit says that you cannot take material from the permitted area outside the permitted area. Is that correct?
So the permit boundary must be expanded. That's what I'm in the middle of.
So that's a discussion with DNR, correct?
After the county level, yes. Then it goes to DNR and DOT and
Southwest. Okay, so in Livingston Mountain,
the whole permit will get expanded.
Okay, so in Livingston Mountain, there are two separate properties.
Mm-hmm.
There's 17040000, which is the Livingston Mountain Quarry property. God forgive me that I know the tax ID number of this parcel. And there is the 100 and whatever acres of land leased to the county and then permitted under the agreement for the removal of rock. There are two separate permits. There are two separate CUPs. Why is it not a violation of the Surface Mining Act for Livingston Mountain Quarry to move aggregate onto the Livingston Quarry site, which is not a permitted area for the Livingston Mountain Quarry?
Because it's DNR's concern, that's one rock pit. Again, they don't care who owns the parcel. They consider that one rock pit that must work together to achieve the ultimate goal, which is final reclamation at the pit. So DNR doesn't care that there's different parcel numbers. They're going to look at Mountaintop as one rock pit, just like they look at Livingston as one rock pit.
Is there any documentation showing that the surface mining permit for Livingston Mountain Quarry authorizes the removal of rock for mining purposes to another parcel?
I'm sure you could call DNR Mines and ask them if what I'm doing is adequate. But to put it in perspective, Livingston is confusing because there is two separate owners, two separate CUPs, and when the CUPs were written, there were two different operators, right? So Mountaintop really simplifies that. What Cadman's proposing is the same thing. It's expanding the permitted boundary as just one bigger rock pit, but moving material from one parcel to another, DNR doesn't care about that.
Yeah. So at the moment, however, there is no state operation on Livingston Quarry. Actually, by agreement between you, Tower Rock, and the state and the county, until you're completed working the Livingston Mountain operation on the state property, there is no state operation on that parcel. So you're actually operating on another parcel, which isn't, in fact,
well, the agreement to work on that parcel, Greg, is the agreement to rent the space to stockpile material mined from Livingston Mountain Quarry, staged on the Livingston Quarry, and then sold from the Livingston Quarry. That's what those fees represent, is that use.
Okay, so that's a lease, but that's not a permit. They're two different things. The permit doesn't authorize you to move material anywhere outside
it does,
of
because,
the permitted
again,
area.
DNR Mining doesn't look at that as two separate pits. They look at that as one pit.
I understand your theory, but it's a permit. A permit has to be a written document. There is no such documentation. And we've been trying to get Mr. Bromley, who's the head of the Surface Mining Program at DNR, to answer these questions for about 9 months now, and they refuse to answer the questions. So I can't get the answer because they won't give us the answer. So anyway, so I'll stop.
I could give you
getting
examples.
Anxious about that.
Well, we're getting close. I want to make sure.
So, but my question then goes to Mitch, and I've sent him several requests or notices of violations, and they require a determination about which CUP operates where. So you're claiming that you can, I'm sorry, I don't mean to point at you, but the operator is claiming that they can blast between 7:30 and 6 o'clock on Livingston Mountain Quarry, which is where the only blasting is to happen until the wedge comes down. Under CUP 2007-00013. And they're claiming the right to take trips off according to a CUP authorizing 70 plus 70 trips under CUP 209-0004. So which CUP appears when? It seems like I called it in one thing. It's like a Chinese menu. You know, if you need blasting, you use this one. If you need trucks, you use that one. If Yakul wants to use, if you want to use the hours from Yakul at Livingston Mountain Quarry, can you do that? What's the limit to where you can pick and choose your permits? And why do you think that the blasting is okay there and the trips are okay there? It just is baffling. A CUP is to an operation and a parcel. It is not to this grand unified, it's like physics. It's not the grand unified theory of physics. There's no grand unified theory of Livingston Mountain. The only grand unified theory of Livingston Mountain is that all of the mineral rights on Livingston Mountain, Section 14, all of them are owned by the state of Washington. That's the only unification.
That isn't true either.
Yes, it is true.
If it doesn't specifically say including gravel, the document that you're referring to is not accurate. But beyond that, I'll explain. There's a CUP in 2010 where hearings examiner considered acceptable hours for blasting on the Livingston Mountain Quarry. He determined that that was 7:30 to 6 p.m. That was after the 2009 CUP on the Livingston Quarry, which restricted it to 5 p.m. It postdates the 2009 CUP that you referenced. It considered how close the homes were, and they determined that 6 p.m. was acceptable. So that, as far as noise standards go, I relate it to the parcel that we're actually performing or where the noise is coming from on. As far as the load counts, we are operating on that parcel also because it's yet to be determined if the loads assigned to the CUP on Livingston Mountain Quarry can be added to the loads on the Livingston Quarry for a combined of 235, which was my representation or interpretation from the beginning. That's to be determined by hearings examiner.
Why is there any allowance to presume that you could merge two?
Well, because now there's two CUPs.
When you're in a busy period at Livingston, can you take, like, say, example, you get to the end of this and you don't have enough truck trips to get the rest of the gravel out? Are you going to say, oh, I'll take 150 trucks for the next week a day?
I think my interpretation was more reasonable than that one. I mean, they're adjacent CUPs, which at the time it was contemplated, it was two separate operators. So they were actually contemplating a crusher on this on this property and a separate crusher on this property. So there were standards set contemplating two separate operations going on at the same time. I think that the interpretation of those standards in the CUP change when it's now becomes one operator,
whose interpretation?
Separate CUPs.
No hearing examiners rule that, no judges rule that. The fact that the operators think that that's a good idea because it benefits the operators doesn't mean that that can be the law of the land.
Again, the traffic.
These gentlemen took over. The staff in the county said, "Oh, what the hell? Just do whatever you want, right?"
So there was a traffic study done.
You've gotten in that mindset that you can do whatever is to your benefit.
That isn't. But I'll wrap up quickly. That at the time, as far as trips, there was two separate CUPs and two traffic studies done. Okay, so the one in 2009 was done, and that contemplated 140 loads a day. In 2010, it was ruled that an addition on top of those that were already in place, an additional 95 could be added to the public road system. So it's not unreasonable for me to interpret that the hearings examiner considered 235 loads a day coming off that hill.
Provided a crusher was placed on that site, which never happened.
And that's something that doesn't make sense to me that I intend to read. Because whether there's a crusher on site or not, there is always the possibility of product, so therefore the possibility of trips coming out of it. I don't know why that would be contingent on a crusher being in place.
I can answer that, but they're going to be mad at me if I keep talking.
Mitch, can you tell us a little bit about what your office is doing to look at the CUP process holistically? Part of the reason we're here is because of all of these problems. We see, you know, operations that work relatively smoothly in this county because incompatible uses have not been sited adjacent to each other historically. As long as they are, we'll always be sitting at a table like this. I'd like to know that, and I'm sure the operators of businesses would like to know how we are looking at the CUP process from the get-go to do better.
Sure, and that great question, thank you. So just the CUP process itself, CUPs are a point in time exercise based on the prevailing conditions and circumstances and residents and the feedback from the community at that specific time. When you're contemplating operations that last for many decades and you're dealing with it in a single point in time, you've got to also be mindful of contemplating that things change over time, and you should be preparing that CUP to govern that. So when we're looking at our CUP process, we're looking at informing it better. As so, staff recommendations that are handed to the hearing examiner or given in the hearing have to be mindful of all the impacts and the longevity of the operation. So that's an improvement that we're going to make.
Is community planning doing that, or is that your office?
So right now, that will be handed off to the land use team and the hearing process. My office is only evaluating the actual CUPs and monitoring compliance. The other thing we've developed is a draft tool that I've circulated to hopefully everybody here that lists all the conditions of a particular CUP. And it's a draft in the sense that I'm looking for feedback and how reasonable it is to be understood, to be valuable to anybody that's looking at it, to be transparent. So you can easily see that the operator and the county are working together and monitoring compliance with the CUP along the way. This is something that, you know, basic contract management 101 really does is important in monitoring. If you're making an agreement with somebody and you're giving an operating permit to somebody, you're conditioning a permit, somebody needs to monitor the checks and balances along the way. In the downturn, we used to have a position dedicated to doing that around the county up until the economic downturn, and we had to basically cut 50% of our staff. A lot of the jobs that were not critical went away at that time, and they just haven't been replaced. We have now replaced the monitoring activity, but we're developing the tools around being more transparent, sharing that information with everybody concerned so everybody can see that there's active monitoring going on and there's compliance work going on.
I think part of the concern is just the inconsistencies in the CUPs and Clark County Code, making it very difficult to enforce, which then draws into question why operators are continue to allow to operate if there is no enforcement, because a conditional use permit is to mitigate impacts, and if you can't ensure that they're being mitigated, then we have a problem.
Yeah, they tried to mitigate a lot of that with the surface mining overlay. The CUPs, and they're specific to each site, mm-hmm. and so they vary dependent again on who, you know, what the record contains and what the hearing examiner decides. As we inform that process, we also have to get better as staff at informing mm-hmm. that process and being mindful of the actual impacts over the long term versus just sure. that point in time.
And it will probably take code change as well. I mean, you know, the holiday restrictions are from 2015 on. If not, you go back to the original CUPs, and they vary all over the place.
Yes.
And that is, I think, a problem for everyone's expectations. So knowing that you are looking at some of those changes, the big changes, I think are better for everyone to know what to expect.
Right.
So can I give a simple suggestion? So one of the issues other people here are concerned about is operations on holidays. The CUPs for Livingston Mountain have no restriction on holiday operations. The surface mining ordinance in Clark County does say that certain holidays, I don't remember if they're specified or just in general, are not to be operated on. The CUP at Yakult has a restriction on holidays. What is a holiday? So, but that's, you know, that's something that needs to get sorted out.
Yeah, so for the record, legal holidays have been defined in the RCWs.
Yes, I understand that.
That's what the common understanding
so
is.
So because the surface mining ordinance in Clark County specifies that holidays are not to be used for quarry operations, Mr. Stordahl can make a good gesture on the same level of Cadman being helpful to the community. Would you pledge not to operate on holidays on Livingston Mountain for the remaining duration of operations at Livingston Quarry? You can do that on your own.
Well, like you said, Greg, what are holidays defined by the RCW? But the private industry doesn't take the same days off that the public sector does. So there's a whole industry that is reliant on having aggregate provided on certain holidays that the public sector takes off and is paid for, the private sector still goes to work on a lot of those days, like President's Day and Veterans Day, the private sector works. Martin Luther King Day, the private sector works. Indigenous People Day, the private sector works. So to shut down all the rock pits in Clark County when there's an industry that relies on it, I can't say that I can make that commitment. I think there's a lot of people that would be disappointed if I were to close on those days because they would still be working.
I'm just saying that is the ordinance in Clark County for newly permitted quarries, and it is included in some of the CUPs that you operate under. Seems like it would be a gesture of goodwill to the community after years of abusing us to say, for the last year, we will adhere to what the will of the council has been in passing an ordinance that says that it would be appropriate actually to honor those people that are being honored on those holidays.
I just want to say one thing. As you're going through the process for new process of conditions and non-compliance, if there's no consequence, they're going to continue to not comply. So I think that Clark County moving forward should take the stance that if the permit holder is out of compliance, they don't get to bid on other contracts within Clark County. And I guarantee you those operators and landowners will come into compliance. So I think that's something you need to take into consideration because there's no teeth in any, I mean, a $500 fine is nothing compared to losing a contract.
I'd like to say one last thing because we've been criticized roundly, everything from being called terrorists going to sabotage the pit to to NIMBYs, you know. Anyway, every epithet you could have, and mostly we have the industry coming and saying that we're anti-gravel and we don't understand the need of gravel and business is dependent on gravel and homes are dependent on gravel. We all live in houses that are dependent. We understand that. We support it. I would just like to say, and I think I can speak on behalf of most of the Livingston people that are here, we applaud Cadman for their openness and willingness to deal directly with their community. We have not had that experience. We support Cadman. We encourage them to expand, and we encourage other companies to take the same approach to dealing with their communities that we see there. We were not aware of what was going on at Cadman. My God, if we had had that, we wouldn't be sitting here. We wouldn't be pissed off all the time. We wouldn't be challenging every nook and cranny that we can find now. But that's not been our experience, and it's a sad thing. We are not against the industry. There is a need for rock. In fact, all the rock that Clark County needs is probably not in Clark County, and we're probably going to end up getting rock barged in or brought over from Oregon or whatever it is over the long term. But if we have operators that are responsible and willing to work with the community and adhere to standards and mitigate the concerns for the community, my God, let's support them, and we do support them. And I don't want to be accused one more time of being against gravel because that's not what this is about. And I'm sick of being accused of that. And I would just refer to you to a document I recently got from the Department of Natural Resources, who gives me as many documents as the county gives me, of a study done by the building industry in Clark County several decades ago, where most of or a large percentage of the gravel being mined in Clark County was used to build out across the river in Oregon. And so when you say that that's not ever happened, that's not the case. And we don't object to that. It's a free market. You can't control what state you do business in. And we support, you know, disciplined, responsive, good neighbors in the industry. And we encourage those that we find, and we will help the ones that we find to expand their business. So that's all.
Thank you. I can't help but I need to note in good conscience that Bo Stordahl has been as responsive as anyone in this particular forum. He doesn't have to be here.
And Tower Rock is not.
Right. Tower Rock isn't, but I'd say that they are through Bo. I mean, it's fair enough to say that.
Tower Rock is not here.
I appreciate that, but I think he's a great spokesman.
He is a great spokesman, and we've gotten along pretty well, even though we disagree on a lot of these things. But Tower Rock is not here. Tower Rock owns the contract, holds the contract, made millions of dollars off of this, and they're not here.
Right. I appreciate that. but I don't want to diminish everybody's contribution here. I mean, this forum doesn't exist without participation at all levels. And as, you know, as much as we've heard about the dissatisfaction from the county's actions, from the operator's actions and stuff, we're going to keep coming to these things, and we're going to try and make some meaningful progress.
Bo has taken a lot of punches.
He certainly has.
And we appreciate that he's done that, and we bear him no personal ill will. But we wonder where Tower Rock is, and we wonder why they got paid millions of dollars, and we wonder what they've done to earn those millions of dollars, and we wonder why they're signing contracts that are putting Bo in a position where he has to take the abuse from us.
I'll take the opportunity to stick up for Tower. I'm the operator. You know, the complaints come through me. Tappany's been in this community for a very long time. They're a very well-respected contractor. I think their name gets dragged through the mud quite a bit. I don't think it's appropriate. I don't think they deserve it. They signed a contract with Clark County. I signed that same contract. I don't think that Tower Rock needs to be bad-mouthed. I don't see where they've done anything wrong. It seems personal.
Sit here and answer the question. They signed contracts that we're fighting.
Okay.
We can't argue contracts with you because you didn't sign the contracts. You didn't apply
the permits. I know what the contract says. I didn't go through the CUP process, but... Well, that really doesn't matter because the issue is with the operations, right? What?
It's a combination. It really is. When you live right next door or a short distance away and you feel your house having an earthquake every time there's a blast, it gets a little upsetting. Even if I'm expecting one, I don't expect it to be that bad. That bothers me. It affects me.
And I will say that.
Mentally, emotionally.
Have they been worse over the last few months?
Pardon me?
Have they been worse over the last few months?
For the most part, no. They haven't. They have been much better. I will give you credit for that.
It depends where you live. It depends on where you live on the mountain.
There was one just this last week. And it was a heavy one. And I'm going,
We are
putting in a lot of money to remodel our house. I don't want to have to start all over again.
Yeah. Like I was saying, with one or two shots left, we're on the final, you know, rim coming down. So I would suspect that.
Well, see, I was under the understanding that there was not going to be any more blasting. Now, that might have been I missed something somehow or another. But I really did.
There was a lot of rumors going around
it was
when
your material that was ready to go. I didn't realize that it included blasting.
Yeah.
So when that first started,
I heard a lot of versions too about what we were doing when we were moving our crusher out, and it's just
yeah, I heard that one too.
That comes when there's not great communication between the operator and the community. Nobody knows what's happening, so you know.
Yeah, that's the I've whole seen that. Problem. We don't know what's going on, and we're right there. You know? Our wells have been affected by it. I know it doesn't sound like it should be much, but it's a lot to have to deal with when you're living it day to day. And I'm not opposed to you personally, not at all. Do I like all the rock trucks anymore? No,
sure you
I
don't.
Used to, but I don't anymore. And I'm going to be honest about it. No, I don't like them. They're noisy. I can't stand that they're using their Jake brakes. I have it every single day. They're coming down the hill.
You live on 262nd Highland Meadows?
Well, Bradford. Coming over the top from on Bradford.
A suggestion
Jake
might
brakes
be
are enough to drive or
and may
I'm
I know
an
Livingston
driver.
I know Livingston's coming to a close, but for the Yak Cult, suggestion might be to create a website or a Facebook page or hire somebody to be a communication specialist. I mean, something just to get out there so that there's some back and forth communication, I think that would solve a lot of your problems, truly.
I mean, last week we had a truck run off the road. There was no notification to 311 except from the community, because when we called in, they said, oh, we just got a call from your neighbor. There were no flaggers, there were no flares. Whoever the operator was, I could remember the name of the company, but I won't say, brought in a second truck and started moving truck gravel from one truck to another, immediately adjacent to a school stop. There was no communication, none.
And trucks kept running up because they didn't stop.
And passed a single lane that was blocked by two gravel trucks. Nothing. There's no response at all. And that's been our experience for a decade.
Okay, noted.
All right, thank you. One last bit of housekeeping. If you have an opportunity to look for the tool that I sent out, please feel free to look at it, give me your comments. You can reply to the Quarry mail. Yes. Certainly. Okay.
So we're closing like December 2020, right? So there's no more trucks coming out of that side of the quarry yet, other than like dirt trucks for reclamation. Is that what I'm understanding?
Let me get, hard to remember all the dates, but I will pull this out.
I mean, whatever the date said on the paper.
Yeah, per the agreement.
December 31st, 2020.
Yep.
Okay, so here's my question. I'm really confused because there's two quarries. Does that just mean that one part of the quarry? Because I had thought trucks would be done in December 2020, but now I'm thinking maybe that's just one half of the quarry. Do we like have any sort of idea when the other part of the quarry is closing? Because that wasn't clear at all.
What do you mean by potentially?
We would potentially be done with Livingston Quarry and still have material to remove from the Livingston Mountain Quarry.
Do we know like anything about that? Like how long would that take, or any sort of timeline for winding that part down? Well, what's the current plan, I guess, is that what I'm asking?
The current plan is to be completely done with both sides as soon as possible by the end of the year. Okay. Now, if there's material left over on the Livingston Mountain Quarry that needs to be removed, that goes past the end of December 31st, 2020, I fully intend to move that.
Right, because I understand that part. So. But wait, let me finish my question, please.
Violation of what?
I mean, there's two driveways, so I'm not worried
That's
about that. My question is
Livingston Quarry, though.
It's one operation.
I want to be clear.
Okay, but I'm sorry, let me please ask my question. So what is the legal contract say for that part of the quarry? Is there a wind-down date that is anywhere in anything?
Well, that would be a contract between me and the property owner.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So that's not part of this at all?
Part of this at all.
Isn't Tappany in the room? Could we bring him forward and ask?
Well, that's a plan of operations between the operator and the landowner, and the landowner being DNR Lands Division on the Livingston Quarry. That's what the plan of operation refers to with the timelines, as well as the contract between Tower, Clark County, and DNR Lands.
And there's also the famous 2011 post-decision review and a road maintenance agreement that says that all material coming off of Livingston Mountain must come across the scale and go out the gate on Livingston Quarry, which is prohibited after the 2020 deadline.
Mm-hmm.
There are all these entwined things, Bo, that would not allow that to be legally taken off of that property after that day.
I just
want you to say that that's what you're going to do, that you're not going to continue running Livingston Mountain Quarry after that day.
I'm not going to say that because I could potentially have inventory left behind that I'm supposed to do what with?
That's not our problem.
Well, there isn't a contract on the Livingston Mountain Quarry.
My question is, as a resident, I don't know anything about this other quarry. It's in my neighborhood. That's a problem as a resident. I live a few blocks from this.
Because
there's a history.
I think I've been clear. If there's material there, I intend to move it off the Livingston Mountain Quarry.
At 16 or 95 trucks a day, I mean, you know.
That's what I need. If I'm limited to 16, then it's 16. I have to read that document.
So I guess the question is to code enforcement and compliance. Are you going to look into this so that we all have an answer coming soon? Because it's not fair to us to sit in this limbo of...
So we will,
we know anything about anything, which is
We'll look into any reported complaint violation.
But what is it they're violating? We don't know.
It depends. I mean, as we pointed out earlier, there's multiple different types of agreements that we have to look at.
But
I wish it was as simple as looking at a single document.
But I don't want to wait until December 30th of 2020 and have trucks rolling through. I think it's fair to the community that we know what the rules are and laws.
Not allowing the 70 peak trips to continue on. Right. We're only 10 months left. You've gone through 6 months already. If it goes another month or two before even an application is put in, it'll take it. Last year, we were told it would take 16 months to get a hearing examiner to consider the first CUP that was considered before you all got there, and Heath Henderson was looking at renewing the contract in 2007. It was a year and a half before there could be a hearing on it. We'll get to the end of operations, and they're going to be running 140 trips because they've delayed pursuing this. And now we're being told, the other quarry, we're not going to make any commitment. That is just infuriating, honestly.
Sure. Well, I agree that lack of clarity is a concern. We'll do what we can to clarify.
The operator and the owner of the property, who seems not to want to talk about it, can make that very clear, just as with the question about not operating on holidays as a gesture towards the community.
I think what is clear, though, is the limited amount of resource that's left there. I think that's clear. I've demonstrated that tonight. The challenge for me is getting it all out of there by the finish date, but I, from what I've read, I have an opportunity to finish the resource off of Livingston Mountain Quarry after this date, if necessary, at a reduced rate, of course, and abide by the CUP designed for the Livingston Mountain Quarry. Livingston Quarry goes off the table. It doesn't even exist anymore. So it's strictly to the property owner and the CUP attached to that parcel is how I read it.
How much on that side do you have left?
About half the volume that I said, a couple hundred thousand ton.
Couple hundred thousand?
Yep. Okay. Now, ideally, I move both sites by the end of this year, but if the market doesn't allow that, then I'm moving everything I can off of Livingston Quarry first, and then I'll push the efforts onto Livingston Mountain Quarry.
Well, the contract says you have to clear all of the private stuff off of there in time to take down the wedge and market the material from the wedge.
It does.
And that has to be done by the 31st of December.
It does.
So obviously you have to get the site.
Hence my efforts to clean that up first.
Sorry, the private rock.
Yep.
You know, a couple months ahead of time to finish the wedge, right?
Sure.
Are those your two remaining blasts, the wedge?
What's that?
Is the wedge the last blast right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
When I said one or two, I meant on the Livingston Mountain Quarry.
Okay. So how many for the
likely
wedge?
More one. The wedge is a half a blast. It's tiny.
Ready to go?
Yeah.
So then there won't be any more blasting?
Then there won't be any more blasting.
Some slopes for reclamation.
No, I don't.
Bo, I have a question. For a long time, you were running a ton of stored all trucks, and there's not very many stored all trucks, but I see a gazillion stored all trucks on I-5 and 205. Why are they not coming up to Livingston?
Because all the work that I bid was bid out of Mountaintop Quarry.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
So I have one last question for the county based on something that's been said. So if the operators don't agree that they have an obligation to pay the debt as the auditor has ruled and it's there, I'm not making I went to the auditor and said, I don't believe Tower Rock has an obligation to pay the minimum required because there's no payment clause in the contract. That was part of the contract that was done badly. There is no requirement for you to pay after 2016. I even said in my message to the auditor, which is there, I think the county owes you all a refund of that $50,000 back to 2016. The auditor came back and said, contrary, the
extended.
Doesn't believe that they are obligated to pay that and takes issue with the finding of the county auditor. Unsolicited, I argued the position in your favor that they ought to be paying you back, and not as a, not in a facetious way, seriously, and he said, no, you all have to pay. If they challenge you, does the county have $340,000 in the budget to pay DNR?
I can answer that. At the end of 2022, the contract between Clark County and Tower must be extended. At that time, Clark County will take the position with DNR. The resource is gone. The minimums will cease to exist. You're in the reclamation phase. There's a clause in that PSC with DNR that talks about finishing up the contract. If there isn't a resource left, a reasonable landowner wouldn't suggest that the operator continue to pay minimums when there isn't a resource left to recover those.
Not to be argumentative, Bo, but several of us went, and God will be in trouble with the county again. We went and talked to the senior managers at DNR, in this case, the director of sales and leasing, Mr. Dwayne Emmons and Anna, who you know well, and their view was that the obligation extends to the termination of the contract in 2027. We discussed this, but they said the obligation extends.
I will greatly disagree with that.
I imagine you've got $340,000 in the budget to pay.
No, I think this is the first time I've seen the finding from the county auditors, and I like to dig into it and what it means. Yeah. So appreciate you giving me a copy. So, yeah. No, I understand that. So appreciate that. At this point, I don't know, because I'm sure it's going to be a lot of legal interpretation that needs to be, and it's not my, under my purview. So, yeah. But appreciate the information. We'll look into it. Yeah.
Okay, thank you all. We'll see you in a couple of months. Hopefully, I've been working with Southwestern Contractors Association to possibly be a presenter here at the next meeting. Thank you.
Yeah, right. I know. Yeah. 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 Ye